Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the Grumpy Collector Podcast. I'm your host, Troy McHenry, an incurable collector of all things. On this episode, we are talking about the dark and ugly side of owning watches when routine service goes very wrong, when you find yourself in a deep hole and you just somehow keep digging it with your watch. Today's episode will be like a This American Life episode, broken up into three acts or stories. As always, if you like what you hear, please give us a five-star review and subscribe to the show on your streaming platform of choice. And without further ado, yeah, your life just got better. I hope you enjoyed the last episode on the state of the watch collection. Last year was a bit crazy and definitely expecting to slow my roll this year. I've actually already sold a watch. I ended up selling my Breguet Classique with the enamel dial and white gold a couple weeks ago. And I have to, I'll do a shout out to this retailer because I had heard they offer maybe the most compelling prices as a dealer for Breguet, which sometimes can be a tough sell. And it was a European watch. And honestly, I could not be happier. They gave me an offer on my watch that I thought was reasonable. They sent me the FedEx label and I popped it on and dropped it off at my nearest FedEx location. And a couple days later, it never showed up. It went from where I dropped it off in Chapel Hill. It went to Durham, to Greensboro, North Carolina, and then disappeared. And I started to get so worried. And I called European Watch. And of course, the watch is insured through Houdinki/Chubb. And so I was like, oh, I'll keep the insurance on if we need it. But of course, European Watch has insurance too. I'm just like, what happened to my watch? Well, they spoke to FedEx and FedEx was keeping an eye out for it. And thankfully, I had taken a picture of the box with the label when I dropped it off, which I kind of just do out of habit. I don't even think about it. And I don't know why I do. I just kind of do just say, hey, here's proof. I'm dropping it off. Here's what it looks like. And here's with the label on it. Well, I had reused a box at that shipper. They had given it to me nicely. I'd wanted just a regular factory FedEx box, one like the size of a shoebox to put it in. Breguet cases aren't that big. And they didn't have one, so they gave me a brown box and we taped it up no problem and put the little label in the envelope and stuck it on. Well, apparently, somewhere in either Greensboro or in transit to Memphis, FedEx's big air hub, the label fell off the package and it just totally disappeared off all of their tracking for a couple weeks. And I was really sweating it. This was my nicest watch and I had already sold it. And European Watch was like, don't worry about it. Stay calm. We got you. Yeah, we think it'll turn them up. Like, there's no way it's turning up. It's a Breguet. It's lost its label. Someone just won the lotto with it. And they even went ahead and next day'd me a check for the amount of the watch, which I thought was very nice. But I'm like, man, I really don't want to cash this until I know they have the watch and that they're happy with it. Because that's the other thing. I wanted to make sure that they were happy with it. And of course, I think it's mint and it was in great condition. And of course, all box papers, everything, you know. But they're like, no, don't. It's all good. And eventually, yeah, FedEx did locate it. And they actually said my photograph that I had sent to European Watch that they had then sent to FedEx helped. So how about that? And ultimately, they got the watch and were very pleased with it. And disaster averted. So why do I bring up this story? Because this is kind of a nice way to set the stage for today's episode around the dark and ugly side of owning watches. We all talk about the great, oh, look, you can flex, they hold their value, they could even go up in value. You love the micro mechanics, you love the finishing, the materials, the details, the brand, the accuracy, whatever it is that you love about watches. But these are little machines that are incredibly complicated, in most cases, entirely mechanical, and they can be prone to failure. And even more so, because they're mechanical, every watch will need servicing at some point. And I just think it's so interesting. We're going to talk about kind of three stories here with some pitfalls of when things kind of go off the rails. But there are ways throughout the whole process in these stories where we could think about there's lessons to be learned. And also, I think it really talks about this three-prong relationship that's kind of inherent in watches we don't think about, because a lot of watches are not sold directly from the brand or the manufacturer or the maison, right? You're buying them from an authorized dealer or a retailer, or maybe you're not. Maybe you're just buying it from an aftermarket dealer. And so you have this weird trifecta relationship between the brand who made the watch, the retailer or authorized dealer, and in some cases not authorized dealer, who sold the watch, and then you have the buyer. And then when something goes wrong with that watch, two or three typically get involved, and you kind of can have this situation of a lot of finger pointing going on. And so I think this episode is going to be so important for every watch collector, because I think there's going to be some really good stories that come out of this. And we'll link up two of these stories in the show notes. So go to thegrumpycollector.com and you can see them here if you want to learn a little bit more about these. And I don't think these are new stories. I think most people are going to already know maybe these, but I think it's just a really good reminder. Okay, and now into really quickly some housekeeping things. I had really hoped to get more episodes already out by this time of year in 2023. But now I'm realizing I had the exact same problem this year as last year. I lost my voice in January, February timeframe, coupled with a really persistent cough. Sorry if my voice doesn't sound 100% yet. I'm going to chalk it up to having three kids, with one of them still in daycare, and they're just bringing home all sorts of stuff. But I finally feel like I'm on the mend enough, so hopefully my NPR voice is back, or at least 95%. I also have one quick surprise. I'm really excited that I will be in Geneva, Switzerland, during part of Watches and Wonders in April. I am over the moon with the opportunity to be there and meet so many people I've only known from either Instagram or WhatsApp groups. If you're a listener of the pod and will also be there during the show, please ping me. I'd love to meet up and say hi and thank you for listening. Also, I'm taking delivery of a watch I ordered over a year ago while I'm in Switzerland. So stay tuned for more on that development. I could not be more excited. Okay, now on to our main topic. Owning a watch, you know, we talked about how these are mechanical things. They are a little bit like owning a car. And with a car, we think about you need to get maintenance on it based on one of two things, right? You're either going to change the oil based on your mileage, or you're going to change your oil based on just time, right? Because things break down over time. The oils get dry, they get stale, whatever. And so you kind of have to do one or the other. With watches, there's a little bit of this, but really most people I've talked to, even if the brand or the manufacturer says, hey, we recommend you get your watch serviced every 5 years, or every 4 years, or every 3 years, whatever it is. Some say every 10 years. I really don't know any watchmaker, any collector that sends their watches in if everything's working right. Everyone just takes it in once something is broken on it. I'm certainly that way. And I've always kind of felt that way. I'm like, hey, as long as it's working, keeping great power reserve, keeping good time, it's going to stay on the wrist. You know, with cars, we don't necessarily do that. But watches can be just as expensive as cars. And so that's one thing to kind of keep in mind is, when are the times when you need to maybe think about getting a watch serviced? And I think in hopefully 99% of the cases, it's a pretty routine thing. Maybe you started realizing the power reserve is not lasting as long, or the timing's a little bit off, the accuracy, and so you bring it into your authorized dealer, your retailer where you purchased it, and they're happily take it, and either they have a watchmaker on site who can repair it. If it's under warranty, they'll do the work, or worst case, maybe they have to send it back to Switzerland or Germany, or maybe they even have a US-based repair shop. Just like Rolex has one in Dallas, and Audemars Piguet has one in Clearwater, and a couple brands have them in like New Jersey or Pennsylvania or Miami, whatever. And a couple weeks go by and you get your watch back. That's the majority of the experience for most people. Well, you're now going to hear about three experiences where that was not the case. I won't tease out any of these anymore, but we will start with the first one. And the only spoiler I'll give is the third one is my own story, which we'll definitely get into. So enjoy. Okay, this first story is from The Watch Enthusiast London. He has a YouTube channel by the same name. His Instagram account is also the same name. His video about his A. Lange & Söhne Zeitwerk right now has 521,000 views. So my guess is most of you maybe already know this story, but since it's been nearly 2 years now, I still think it's so worth retelling, because where else can a photo be worth over 35,000 British pounds? So let's set the stage for this. So Watch Enthusiast London, he had been wanting a A. Lange & Söhne Zeitwerk for a while. Wonderful watch. And the authorized dealer around him had it, but they were just selling it at full retail. And even after he showed them some great comps of like new on Chrono 24 and elsewhere, they're like, no, we're not budging on this. And this is a pretty pricey watch. He talks to a friend. He's like, oh, I have a friend who's authorized, keyword here, right? A Lange & Söhne dealer in Italy. And maybe they'd be willing to discount a little bit for you. And they work out a deal. He pays for the watch. It gets shipped to him. Everything's great. So this is in July of 2021 is when he purchases the watch. Then he decides to go to Maunder Watch Co. to get an appraisal done on this Zeitwerk, as well as an Odysseus that he has, also by A. Lange & Söhne. And this is on May 2022, on the 28th. No problem. He drops the watches off. Takes a while because they're going to write up an appraisal for both for insurance. And so he goes to lunch, comes back, you know, maybe an hour or two later. And the watches are done. And he picks up the watches, picks up his new paperwork, and everything's fine. Then, about a month later, on June 27th, his Zeitwerk stopped working right as it was trying to shift to 2 p.m. So that I would be heartbroken if that happened to me too. And so I think he does the reasonable thing. He's like, let me go to the nearest A. Lange & Söhne dealer. He lives in London. So he went to Wimpy on Bond Street. And he's like, maybe they can look at the watch and maybe it's something simple they can fix, or they can help me get it back to Germany. But really, he was hoping to avoid sending it to Germany because it could be many weeks or months. But since it was only a year old, it's still under the original warranty because he bought it new. Well, Wimpy comes back and says, hey, not a simple fix. Ultimately, it needs to go to Germany. C'est la vie. That's how it goes. Well, a few weeks later, he inquires with Wimpy, and they're like, oh, yeah, heads up. A. Lange & Söhne said it couldn't be repaired under warranty because it looks like it's been tampered with. As you can imagine, as the owner of this, and you've had it for a year and you've been wearing it, you know, you would just be incredulous. You're like, what do you mean it's not under warranty? And even more so, what do you mean it's been tampered with? And so he starts thinking about, could it be something that happened at the watch appraiser during the couple hours he dropped off the watch? Could it be maybe it was discounted, even though it was from an authorized dealer in Italy? Did they maybe mess with it before selling it to him? You know, is that why it was maybe a good deal? And as he's thinking about this, he's calling the appraiser company up and asking them, hey, did you open up the watch as part of your appraiser? And of course, they're like, no, these have display backs. We can see everything. No need to. If they were Rolexes with closed case backs and we were authenticating them or appraising them, or especially if we were going to buy them, then sure, we probably would open that. But we'd always ask you first. And on Zeitwerk and Odysseus, no, we certainly did not open them up. Well, so that's one. Okay. And of course, the Italian dealer, like, I shipped you the watch. It was sealed in plastic. I mean, come on, it's a brand new watch. No, of course we didn't. We didn't monkey around with it. When it comes back from Ahlunger and Zona saying, yeah, it's been tampered with. Here's four things about it. And one of them is you can see very clearly the rubber gasket is kind of like poking out into the display back of the case, which is crazy. You can even see like one of the screws is turned, you know, a little differently. And rightly so, Ahlunger and Zona says, we can fix this, but again, not going to be covered under warranty. And the cost is going to be £3,540. And this watch enthusiast London asks for photos, and the photos clearly look like that. And he reasonably asks Wempe, he's like, when I first had you guys look at it, did your watchmaker take off the back? Did they look at it? Maybe when they were trying to repair it, and they're like, no, we would not have done that. And he's like, well, I just don't get it. Something somewhere had to have happened. When he's even starting to think, rightfully so, he's like, well, if everyone says they didn't touch it, then the only other logical conclusion is it came from ALS, you know, from Ahlunger and Zona, defective. And really, they need to stand up for their product. Well, it turns out, well, one, you have to think, would Ahlunger and Zona have a couple of these problems, like the gasket sticking out? That seems pretty intense, right? I mean, it could be something mechanically deep in the watch. I could see that happening, but some of the fit and finish stuff that would be caught in QC pretty easily seems hard to believe. But still, I mean, what else are you really left with? Maybe this is the one in the million that left the factory not perfect. Well, as he was thinking about this, he realized that when he dropped off the watch at Wempe, he had taken pictures of the front and back. Just maybe out of habit or just wanted some last photos of it before he handed it over. And he realized this, and he looked, and the date stamps on those were of June 26, I guess. Well, on those photos, everything looks fine. There's not a gasket sticking out. Everything looks pristine. And so really, what is left is that this watch must have been tampered with when it was at Wempe. And wouldn't you know it, the watchmaker who was at Wempe, who worked on it, no longer works there, mysteriously. And part of Wempe's own QC is they take photos of the watches they get in for service, like before and after pictures. They did not take photos of the watch when they received it. And so because of that, there's no evidence except the chain of command where it's missing, or the chain of events, is with Wempe, where they did not follow their standard procedure and they didn't have pictures. And kudos to Wempe, they ultimately ate the charge and fixed it, even though that's not even the AD he bought the watch from, but this is where he dropped the watch off. And I really do think that is where this all happened. You know, Wempe watchmaker was like, oh, let me see if this is a quick fix, and then hastily put it back in and ruined one of the gaskets and some of the screws, and just looked like it had been kind of messed around with someone who probably wasn't fully qualified to work on a Zeitwerk. And so they picked up that bill. And so the moral of this story is, be methodical in your thinking, but even more so, take pictures every time you're going to leave a watch out of your possession. And I'm serious about this, especially with service. But honestly, You should do it too before you, let's say you're gonna loan a watch to a friend for a month or something. Take pictures of the front and back and the sides if you want, right? Because what you don't want to have happen is your friend returns a watch and there's a big gash on the side. And you're like, what the heck? That wasn't on my watch. And they're like, yeah, it was. And you don't have a way to prove it. Well, that conversation is even more testy when you're doing it with a watchmaker or your authorized dealer when things start to kind of go south. So there is a big lesson to be there. And because he had this watch enthusiast, London had photos timestamped of his watch, he knew. And again, this is one where like there's really no winner in this, because not that he was accusing people, but he had some difficult conversations with his friend who helped locate the watch, and with the dealer in Italy, and with the appraiser, not pointing the finger, but you know, when you ask these kind of difficult questions to people and you're kind of questioning them, and then of course, you know, having these awkward conversations with Wimpy where they're saying, no, we didn't do anything. And then you're like, well, maybe it came that way from ALS. Well, it turns out it didn't come that way from Alanga and Zona. The watch came perfectly. But then once it was in Wimpy's hands, you know, something went awry. And so him having those photos saved him a £3,500 service bill. So take this first one as a grain of salt. We all want deals. And you just have to be really cognizant, because when you're buying a watch from an authorized dealer, but if they're not local, that's not who you're going to go through to get it serviced. And so you really are not going to have a relationship with whoever is going to be the one servicing it. And that could create some friction too. So you have to think about, is it worth saving a couple bucks? But now you've kind of built a relationship with a dealer in Italy, but that's not who's going to repair the watch for you. You're going to get that done whoever's closest to you. And so I think that's something else that can be learned here, is potentially it might have been an easier situation if he had bought the watch directly from Wimpy, and or that's also who helped write up the appraisals for him, which I'm sure they would have done too. Just would have simplified a little bit the potential finger pointing here, is kind of also my take, or just something to be just more cognizant of in the process. I hope you enjoyed this one. Now it's time for Act 2. This one is a much more recent example that I read about back in early February on Instagram from Exit Watch, from Ed. And it was about his story with his Parmigiani Tonda Black Dial. Gorgeous watch. These came out a couple years ago. They have a platinum bezel, steel case, steel bracelet. What a gorgeous new design language. And these are not cheap watches. These are like $25,000, 25,000 euros list price. So he's had the watch for a year, setting the stage here. And he pulls it out. He doesn't wear it often. It's a little dressy. And he starts to try to set the time. And it's really hard to turn the crown. So he's like, something's up with this. Why all of a sudden is it so hard to turn the crown, to move these hands? And this is a watch that doesn't have any complications. It has a hour hand, a minute hand, and a date wheel. I don't think it even has a seconds hand. And so he realizes this. So he first goes to where he bought it, and he bought it from an authorized dealer. But guess what? They're no longer an authorized dealer for the brand. So they're kind of like, well, we can't really help you. We're no longer an authorized dealer, so we have no inroads with Parmigiani. So he's like, okay, well, I guess I'll take it to Wimpy. I guess he's in Europe, that is. And the 250-kilometer drive, that's a pretty far drive to the nearest Wimpy location, which I think for his, I think is in Hamburg. And so he drives there. And he drops off the watch, and at first the watch tech who looks at it, they're not even really listening to him. And then he finally explains to him, really gets them to hear him. So this is already kind of irritating him. that they're not really listening to what he's trying to say about it. And then they try and like, oh yeah, this is really hard. Probably shouldn't be this hard to move the hands, right? He's like, no joke. And then they say, well, you know, this can happen with old watches. The oils can dry out and it can just be a little bit hard. And he's like, the watch is a year old. This is not an old watch. And so, and also he's a little grumpy that he had to drive all the way to Wimpy to drop it off. Well, Wimpy takes it and they ship it off to Parmigiani and they work on the watch. And I guess it's still under warranty, so that's good. So no cost there. They're not keen on them shipping the watch back to his house. They're like, we'll ship it back to the dealer, the authorized dealer, which is this Wimpy that's 250 kilometers away. And you can just come pick back up the watch, which that's asking a lot because that's a really long drive. And all this too, Wimpy's not too thrilled about this because it's not even, they didn't even get the sale. You know, they're being asked to kind of be put in the middle of this, of helping this customer who's not even their customer, but because their authorized dealer no longer sells the brand and they're the nearest one, like now they're kind of on the hook to help with all of this, right? And this is taking up their time and there's no sale involved. There's no service involved, right? This is warranty work. And again, that's kind of a sticking point, right? You have this three-prong relationship. And then when your authorized dealer is no longer in the picture, it's like, now you're kind of like, well, do I directly work with the brand? And some brands are really keen on that. And then other brands are not. They're like, no, go through your authorized dealer first. Don't contact us directly. And that's a tough thing sometimes for a watch collector to navigate. Well, eventually he gets his watch back. And the interesting thing is with these Tondas is this micro rotor movement is actually a movement that Parmigiani's been using for since what? The early 2000s. A lot of people I don't think know this. So are the oils dry? Because is this movement from 2009 and it's 2024 now? Are they encasing older movements and newer watches because they have some leftover movements? This is something people need to think about with when you buy a watch sometimes. It's an interesting thing to think about, right? Because obviously Rolex probably is not sitting on a bunch of old movements that they're going to encase and then sell, right? Everything's probably just in time with them, with Tudor and whatnot. But with a brand like Parmigiani, where for a long time they were not super popular until they changed their design language and their dials and their logo and really came out with the Tonda, how many people you knew were really excited about them? My good friend Gary has one, and he has an older one, and the design, I would say, is very polarizing. It has like light blue and black accents. It's pretty big, and it's a watch either love or hate, not universally appeal like the new Tonda has. And so I think Parmigiani today is probably selling 10 times more watches than they were even 5 years ago, probably even more than that. And so, you know, when they went on hard times, maybe they did have some inventory and they're going to use up that inventory first. It's a very interesting idea. And so I'd be curious if we hear of other people with this problem. Matter of fact, if you do, I would reach out to Exit Watch. I'm sure he'd be very interested on Instagram to hear about that. He eventually gets the watch back and magically they're able, I can't remember if he had to drive and pick it back up or they eventually did send him the watch. He gets the watch back and then maybe a month or two later, he's talking to some watch collector buddies and he hands over the watch for them to look at. And one of them points out, he's like, wow, did you notice there's this huge scratch on the main plate? And he's like, what? Pulls it. And there is a huge scratch gouge on the Côte de Genève, the perlage, whatever you want to call it. And pretty pronounced. That must have happened while it was at the factory. Again, having photos when he dropped it off would have been great, right? To prove that point if he needed to. But this case, Parmigiani is like, yeah, that's on us and please ship it back. And now magically they're willing to get the watch. They're willing to pay to have the watch shipped to them. So very interesting. I don't think he's even gotten the watch back yet this final time, but I know he's pretty grumpy about it from his post. And sounds like at this point, he's really fed up and just like, hey, just cut me a check for what I paid for the watch and you can keep the watch. We will see how all this plays out. But again, I think the lesson here is really to understand that if you know, think about it, if your AD did stop selling brands that you've bought, what would you do? Where would you go for service? And I think it is also on the brand, because I don't blame Wimpy in this really at all. You know, maybe they could have done a little bit better job from a customer service standpoint of listening to the customer about their initial issue and trying to be more of that go-between. And maybe that could create some goodwill, so the next time he buys his next watch directly from them, if you have a outstanding service experience, that can also result in new sales. I firmly believe this. But I think the brand also has to step up. And so you do have to think about what could they have done a little bit differently in this case. Should they have just worked directly with him and just shipped him a box and label, put it in, ship it back? So sorry for this. And then how do you QC so you're not adding to it, right? It's already hard enough when you don't have your watch for a period of time because it's getting serviced, and this point probably parts of it had to be re-oiled, and maybe old grease had to be removed as well. But then to get it back and then you have a scratch on the watch, it's like, how are you going to fix that, right? You're going to have to machine a new plate or swap one out. And that could be the one with the serial number on it. It could be a whole thing. And how do you keep the customer engaged? You know, I've heard a lot of different stories of Swiss watch brands where people really have had hit or miss experiences. And I think as a general rule, and I hate to say this, I don't really mean this as a sweeping thing, or, and it's certainly not a stereotype, and maybe I'm making a broad generalization, but I feel like there is far more invested in product development and marketing, right, on the in the sales side, than there is in brand awareness, right, kind of like that sales funnel idea, than there is on the back end around service and customer loyalty. And this is what I do for a living. I manage the measurements framework and our KPIs, our key performance indicators for customer experience. I own all of our surveying and quantitative and qualitative research for a health insurer here in the US. And we're constantly thinking about how do we act on our members' feedback, on our customers' feedback? How do we try to make things right? How do we do atonement? That's really the idea I think about with these cases too. What does the atonement look like? In the first example, in Act One, you know, Wimpy, I think, did great atonement, but you know, they never apologized. And that's kind of the first level of atonement, is just say you're sorry. Be a little bit empathetic and then make it right if you can. It's always better to even be proactive if you can, but if you can't be that, that's fine. Not everyone can, right? That takes a lot of resources and money. But first, acknowledge the mistake. Two, own up to it. And then three, make it right. And I think Wimpy did a pretty good job in Act One of making it right. But when you listen to the YouTube video of Watch Enthusiast London, he really says the biggest thing, he's talking to his wife in the car about it, and she's still livid about it, is that no one really ever apologized for this whole situation. Well, with Exit Watch, he's gotten a few apologies from customer service, but ultimately they've kind of just been what we call like empty platitudes, right? Kind of like when you call a contact center and you're on hold for 30 minutes and just every 2 minutes you're hearing a message that says, your call's important to us. Please remain on the line, right? How does that make you feel? And so there's something where you have to eventually say, what, our actions need to speak louder than words, and how do you make it right? So it'd be interesting to see how all that kind of plays out. Okay, and now on to Act Three. Act Three, my own personal story. Thankfully, my story is not as involved or as expensive as these first two that we heard about, but it's been a long one coming. And well, it's still up in the air how things will work themselves out. We'll see. So couple years ago, back in August, not of this year, maybe even probably the year prior, my good friend Jeff, he always comes to our Red Bar Raleigh meetups, always has lots of watches, and we're at an event, and he has, this is maybe the second or third time I've seen it, this vintage Wachmann Regatta chronograph. It's nice and big, over 40 millimeters in size for a vintage watch. That's pretty cool. Original crystal, original case, original dial, original movement, everything but the missing the original bracelet or strap. Great watch. Super colorful, which I love about this watch. And I remember seeing it a couple months before and it looked great. And then I saw it this time and it was missing a pusher, a chronograph pusher. And I don't know what it was about me. Maybe I'm like the sort of person, if I see the sad dog or cat at the animal shelter, I'm going to adopt it. That's probably why I don't go there anymore. I'm a sucker. Not a sucker in this case, but I saw it and I was like, man, I really like this watch. And Jeff's like, oh, I can cut you a deal on it. I said, oh, that sounds great. I'm sure I can find a replacement pusher for this watch. You know, Wachmann wasn't a huge brand. They're not going to use like proprietary pushers or anything. This should be a pretty easy fix for a watchmaker. So I was like, yeah, this would be great. And Jeff gave me a great deal. I bought the watch. Mechanically, it's in great condition. Aesthetically, it's in good condition. Case a little chewed up, but that's, you know, that's kind of what you expect. And the case, it's kind of an interesting case. It's not stainless steel. It's almost like it's like brass or bronze coated with something. So it's like super shiny. It's almost like a, I don't know if you'd call it like a pot metal or not, but something like that. Well, I attempt to see if I can source the part for it. And I kind of have a hard luck with finding vintage parts, especially if you just search like Wachmann, like nothing really comes up. So I take it to my great local watchmaker, Kyle at Bailey's. He's wonderful. And I think he's really one of those people who performs miracles daily, right? And he keeps it for a while and I'm in no rush. I'm like, Kyle, take your time. Let me know if you think you can fix this, whatever. I appreciate the help on this one. And sometimes time goes by and then I ping him like, hey, any update? And he's like, yeah, I tried. And no, I just think the threads are just a little too threaded out and I just can't get a pusher that I have here to work with it. I was like, okay, bummer, but hey, thank you for trying. And I'm not out any money. Like he didn't charge me anything, even though it took up his time to look at it. So I was very appreciative of him making an attempt at it. So then I do some Googling. I'm like, well, surely there's got to be someone on the internet who can look at this. I follow a bunch of watchmakers and I've really been impressed with the work that Zimmermann Watch Repair does. And I think they're in York, Pennsylvania. And they also do a ton of laser welding and then recutting cases. I was like, man, this would be great. I could really get the case cleaned up and they could probably get a pusher for me. And I write to them and they're like, yep, we certainly think we can do this and, you know, send the watch head up to us and we'll make it right. I was like, awesome. And they sent me a quote for a couple of different things for the new pusher, the installation, including if they have to like laser weld and tap it. And like, yeah, fine. No problem. I then even add, hey, while you're at it, let's go crazy. Totally recut the case and heck, even replace the crystal one because it's acrylic and it's pretty scratched up. And even with poly watch, it was still kind of scratched up and the dial's just stunning. And they're like, sure, no problem. Well, then maybe a couple weeks later after they had it, it finally gets in their queue, right? And they received the watch and they let me know when they received it. So that was very nice. And I knew they have a backlog just like most watchmakers do. So I wait patiently and then it finally gets to mine. And I even told them like, hey, please take pictures because I'd love to see some before and after pictures because they do before and after pictures a lot of some of their laser welding and polishing stuff, which is just like perfect. So I was so excited. And they write to me like, hey, we're sorry, but we can't fix this. They said the case we can't laser weld to because it's not steel. It's brass. So I was like, oh no. And they're like, yeah, you're totally out of luck. And yeah, we're just having a hard time getting a pusher to work in here as well. And so I was like, oh man. And so they're like, please pay. I had already paid to ship it to them, right? So that was already out, that US priority mail. And it's not a crazy expensive watch, so USPS was fine, but it didn't feel like I had a strong need to FedEx it or anything. And they shipped it back USPS, I think, but they, or maybe it was FedEx, I can't remember, but they charged like, it was like 30 or 40 bucks. So, because they're going to charge for their time looking at it. And even if they can't fix it, they're going to also charge to ship it, package it up and ship it back. So now I'm out maybe in total 50 bucks. That's fine. And so I'm like, well, what do I do now? So I took it back to my friend Jeff. I'm like, hey, man, I cannot get this pusher fixed to save my life. And so Jeff apologized. He's like, yeah, I have a buddy and I'll take it to him. We'll see if we can get that, see if they can do it. So I'm like, great. So fingers crossed. And that's where we are right now. But honestly, like, this is, I'm like, there's no winners in this, right? Because Jeff had sold this watch to me. A year has gone by. I just let it sit. I have 50 watches. And so I just never got around to it. So I feel bad coming back to him with the problem, because I'm just like, it's kind of on me. I just sat on it forever in a day. And so that's problematic. And then I'm sure he's feels bad that he sold me a watch that I've never been able to wear. I've yet to ever wear this watch. And so we'll figure something out. Maybe we end up having to just sell it for parts and cut our losses. But oh, that just makes me so upset. And this is really one of the reasons I don't like vintage watches, because it's not like there's a Wachmann company still in existence I can send this to and be like, hey, please service this. It's not like Patek or Seiko, right? Where what Seiko famously keeps the parts to restore all their watches for what, 40 years or something. I think Patek can go back to the dawn of time potentially for a cost. But even at this, like, cost no object, right? Like, I was prepared to spend, you know, the service bill I got from Zimmerman for the recutting of the case, the purchase of the pusher, the installation of the pusher, all of that was probably up to 50% of the price I'd already paid for the watch. And I was fine with it, because at the end of the day, I just want a beautiful watch I can wear. And, you know, I'm not at that money, thankfully, but I've given the watch back to Jeff. And so, of course, I have no watch now. I still have that. The money I spent on it's gone now too, of course. But again, that happened over a year ago. So we will see what happens here. But these pitfalls you have to just think about all the time. And really what I probably should have done in retrospect is probably do some due diligence, right? To say, okay, if I had a Wachmann chronograph missing a pusher before I had bought it, right? Because that watch would have been there another week later or a month later. It's not like there was a bunch of people interested in it. And obviously if I had asked Jeff to hold it for me, he would have. Right? No problem. He would have said, of course, if you want to scope things out. I was also always hoping, like, oh, maybe he'll find that pusher somewhere in his house. But regardless, I was just like, yeah, ugh. So, and I didn't do that due diligence, right? I was stirred up in the moment. I was like, yes, this thing is gorgeous. Now it's a great price. I'm like, what's your PayPal? And send you the funds right now. And so, yeah, we'll see what happens. And of course, Jeff is just a reseller. He's not an authorized dealer or anything. He's just a person and a friend. And so we'll see what happens there. That is the thing you do have to worry about when, outside of having a great person like Jeff, but you do have to think about if you're buying watches online, especially ones that are neo-vintage or older, let's say, right, from the 80s or older, you absolutely need to think about, can I get parts for this? Is this something I can fix? And maybe there's an act 3.5 in here. I do watch repair as well, right? And I had minor stuff. And I had a friend have an old Vostok and Amphibia. And he had a watchmaker swap out the mechanical movement for a quartz movement. But for some reason, the quartz movement didn't have a date wheel. And so they took the old date wheel and just like glued it on. So it just, because the dial had a cutout for the date. So the date just never changed. It was just stuck on the top. It was a mess of a watch to work on. I enjoyed it though. I didn't charge him anything either, because it was just like, it was almost like, again, like the puppy at the pound. I felt sad for him. I was like, oh, let me see if I can help you with this. And he had a bunch of spare movements actually for it, an automatic one and a couple manual ones. And I was able to fit a automatic movement in it, do the dial swap. I even swapped the hands for him to another pair of hands he really wanted instead. And we shoehorned it in and got it to work. And it's now, it looks fantastic. And I know he's very pleased with it. So these, again, just kind of recapping a couple of these stories though, but all of us who are watch collectors are spending a lot of money on watches. And when they're new, it's no problem. And I love that watch brands have started extending their warranties. I think Oris has a really long warranty now. I think some of the Richemont brands have started increasing their warranties, their initial ones. I think Rolex has as well. And I think that's great because these things, I think sometimes we get desensitized when we're paying even $4,000, let's say, for a tutor, right? That's a lot of money, especially when no one needs a watch today, honestly, right? We all have smartphones in our pocket. We all have clocks in our cars and on our microwaves and our desks and on our toolbars of our computers, but we love them for so many reasons. But you do have to think about, as you start growing your collection, about that potential cost that might be looming for every single watch you have in your watch box, right? And if you're someone like me who loves chronographs, well, get ready to pony up, because any complication, it's going to be expensive to get serviced. That budget perpetual calendar that you see might be a bargain on Chrono 24 or eBay or Watch Recon, but then if you end up having to get it serviced, you may get some serious sticker shock. And you also ultimately need to really trust who you have to work on it. So we talk a lot about buyer beware and buy the seller, not just the watch. But I think you also have to a little bit buy the brand, and you also just need to go into things clearly about what's going to be the cost here for some of these things. I think about dealers that specialize in vintage watches, and I love the watches that they have on, like Wind Vintage. We had Charlie and Eric on as special guests last year for Red Bar Raleigh. We did a wonderful Zoom meetup with them. And I love the photography they do, and they carry some of the best watches, and they have a stellar reputation. But I always think about, like, man, these are all old watches. I'm like, and what's to guarantee? I'm sure they provide some sort of guarantee with everything they sell, but I still think about, like, what's the guarantee, or not even the guarantee, because it's not the right word at all. What does the future hold for every vintage watch, right? And obviously, if you're selling vintage Submariners, right, or Sea Dwellers, or Presidents, or Oyster Perpetuals, getting parts for those is not hard. Servicing those is not hard, right? Because there's so many out there that were produced, right? Millions. But if you're buying custom caliber JLCs that are perpetual calendars or chronographs, or there's starting to be some good deals on Neo Vintage Tourbillons, those are not going to be cheap to get repaired, if you can at all, by the brands. And it's going to cost you a pretty penny. So just things to keep in mind from an ownership perspective. The last thing I'd add there is some brands also treat people differently based on how they kind of come to them. And what I mean by that is, someone had shared the story kind of related to Alanga and Zona. If you have a defect with your watch and you're returning it for service, and it's clear to Alanga and Zona that it had been tampered with, it had been opened up by another watchmaker, then they are going to charge you a pretty penny to get that movement fixed. And because they're kind of like, man, we're having to do more because you had some knucklehead open up your watch that wasn't us. And they kind of have you by the balls. I hate to say it like that, but because who else is going to fix your Odysseus chronograph or your Zeitwerk, right? Or your Lange 1, like, they're it. And so they can almost charge whatever they want, and you're going to be stuck with it. And so you have to think about that. Whereas if the watch had never been tampered with, but it is out of warranty and it stopped working, and you send it in for service, I've heard the cost is far more reasonable, right? Because, and also to Alanga and Zona and every brand's credit, right? Like, they don't want to spend time of their repair facilities or watchmakers having to undo the work of other people. Just like me working on that Vostok, I wasn't thrilled with the idea of having to do horological archaeology on a watch and remove this quartz movement and then figure out what parts were specific to the quartz, which ones weren't, which ones did we need for the mechanical movement to fit in and the holder ring and all of that. And so I think there's definitely a lesson we learned there. And then if you're someone like me who I like, though, to buy pre-owned watches. I really don't buy a lot of new watches anymore, because you really can get good deals, but you need to think about, with that good deal, bake into it a couple of years, you might need a cost of a service. And service costs really have gone up. And then the last thing I'll close with is service. And this is going back to kind of my day job. But I've always felt this way. Service is really where the rubber hits the road and is where a brand can really shine. That is when people are at their most desperate, right? Because every company has great self-service, has great digital websites or apps. But those things fail people, or their situation's complicated. Ultimately, it's going to go to some live channel, whether that's if your company does live chat or secure message, or you have a contact center, call center. That is where you make or break on your brand promise. Are you there when I need you? Do you value me? Do you honor me? And can you make it right the first time when I have to call? And how do you take me out of the middle? This is what we talk about in service so much and in customer experience. How do you take that customer or that member out of the middle? And you see with some of these brands where the owner, the watch collector, is very much in the middle. They're the only one in the middle. They are having to play a traffic cop. They are the stoplight directing traffic of the repair center, of the retailer, asking for updates, trying to do all these different things. And so again, it's not just, it is kind of buyer beware, because ultimately all of us as collectors, that's when we kick off these shenanigans, right? That are typically self-inflicted, is the moment we buy these things. And so you really do have to be careful. A pretty dial and a pretty case might be nice, but if you really can't speak to the history of a watch, or if it's old enough where that movement may need a servicing, you gotta just in the back of your mind bake that into your mind. I think to myself, I have close to 50 watches. Every one of them at some point is going to need a service. Think about that. If that's not sobering, I don't know what is. Thankfully, none of them do right now, but they're all ticking time bombs, just like red wine, right? If you hold a bottle of red wine long enough, it will turn to vinegar. It will turn to salad dressing, ultimately, right? It will turn to red wine vinegar if you give it enough time. And so that means every bottle of wine is a bell curve, right? It eventually will peak in flavor and taste profile, right? And it's not usually at the beginning, but I'm not saying it's necessarily a normal distribution either. But then it will slowly make an inevitable decline. And there's nothing you can do to reverse that. And I think with mechanical objects, it's very much the same thing. Every watch, maybe it's not a bell curve, but it is kind of a downward slope, right? Metal wears out, oils and lubricants and jewels wear out. And so from the day they're made, that they all each have their own little doomsday clock to when they're going to need a regular service done. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I really enjoyed making it. This has been a topic that really has been on my mind for a couple months that I really had baked in, but just had to wait till my voice could get a little bit better for me to record it. Hopefully I did all right. I am planning to do maybe an episode or a little field reporting while I'm at Watches and Wonders, so look forward to an episode during or shortly thereafter the show in April. Really excited about that. Until our next episode, I'll see you on Instagram. Don't forget to like, subscribe, all those things. Again, I'll put a couple links out on the show notes on thegrumpycollector.com. Thanks, and be well. Bye-bye.